is KCBX Central Coast Public Radio. It's time for Issues and Ideas, a show that features a wide variety of local voices, sharing their thoughts and perspectives. Coming up, KCBX's Carol Tangerman speaks with Liberan Harris, CEO of the nonprofit Downtown Slow, about what makes downtown so unique.
We have a very high success rate in low vacancy. We're hovering around the 8.6. Many communities are hovering around 30s or 40s.
Then, Caitlin Schiavone, Operations Director and Concessions Coordinator at the Live Oak Music Festival, shares what she appreciates about the festival.
It's just so special to me to see all of Slow County and beyond, this group of friends that comes together year after year.
These stories and more coming up on Issues and Ideas. Good afternoon. It's Monday, May 26, 2025. I'm Meher Ali. Let's start with Father Ian's Playing with Food.
I remember back in the 90s when I lived in the Bay Area, the grocery stores attempted to roll out delivery service. It was called Webvan, and it failed spectacularly. I remember being a bit bewildered because on one hand, Californians want to see and touch their produce before they buy it. And on the other hand, Americans are spectacularly lazy and will have anything delivered. Grocery delivery didn't really take off until something strange happened in 2020. Can't really remember what that was. Now you can get just about anything delivered, not just groceries. You can get your farm fresh produce delivered to your doorstep. Go up to Cal Poly campus and you have to dodge those little robotic coolers on wheels that deliver food that students order from the restaurants on campus. Grubhub, DoorDash, and Uber Eats will deliver anything you like, including a single pack of gum, as one driver told me. But more uniquely, a local delivery service fills the gap between the farm boxes, supermarkets, and restaurants, ordered from one place and delivered to your doorstep.
My name is Taryn Moeller, and I'm the Director of Operations for Harvestly. Harvestly is a local nonprofit that essentially works with almost 100 small farmers and food producers in our community and then delivers that product, a customized bag, a customized order to your doorstep, all the way from Orchid to Paso Robles.
Is it kind of like the CSA box you get from Tally?
It is similar, but we do a lot more than just fruits and vegetables. You can order whatever you want. So ours is not a preset box. Ours is whatever you want to put in it. So you could order fruits and vegetables, frozen meat, eggs, ready-to-eat food. There's a huge variety. We have over 1,200 products on our site that you can shop through.
Wow. What's the origins of Harvestly?
It started by Cal Poly students in 2020, and they saw a need to try to cut out the middleman because usually the middleman takes a larger profit. Us as a nonprofit, our goal is to keep as much money in the farmer's pocket or the producer's pocket instead of us keeping the money. They decided to kind of go on to other endeavors. They didn't want to see it go away. We didn't want to see it go away since they were working with so many great locals. And that's our goal, is to create a community of food and people that support people that are providing those foods.
You bought it from the students and took it to the next level?
Essentially, yes. Tweaked it and changed it a little bit. Still kept their core model and their vision, but changing it to a nonprofit has really given us access to grants and different funding and different opportunities that we wouldn't have, especially when it comes to helping the farmers and finding funds for them to help their businesses as well.
So did they approach you specifically, or did you see that they were for sale?
They approached a local nonprofit called Slow Money Slow and some different investors that were involved with them to see if they would take it over, because Slow Money Slow was an organization that gave out loans to small farms and to small food producers to help them grow and help them start. A couple of investors from Slow Money Slow decided to take Harvestly on. That's how I was brought in and started running it, and that was a couple years ago.
Cool. So can we see what you do?
Yeah, of course. So on a typical Friday, all of our orders have already been placed, and this is the day that our wonderful College Corps fellows and our staff are packing our bags. We have insulated bags, and all of the food for an order goes into that. There's pick lists to make sure that the correct quantity and the correct items are being put in the bag. Then when they're done packing them, there's ice packs added to keep things cool and zipped up, and they are ready for our delivery drivers to come pick them up. Our delivery drivers arrive around 1 o'clock, load up their order, and take it out on their delivery route.
Can we look into a typical bag?
I don't know if there's a typical bag. Do you want to just pick one?
Sure.
This is an example of an order. So there's a buttermilk ranch dressing.
Where does that come from?
That comes from Berry Hill Bistro in Paso Robles.
Oh.
There's a caramelized sweet potato peanut curry soup from Stephanie Nye. She's at Farmers Markets. There's a chipotle cheddar cheese, that's from Cal Poly. There's a deep dish caramelized garlic onion focaccia bread, Haas avocados, mapo tofu, some organic baby lettuce, organic broccoli sprouts, organic pitted dates, some organic red leaf lettuce, and some organic salad sprouts, pimento mac and cheese, a slice of maple pecan pie, some snickerdoodle cookies, tomato pie, a vegan salad, artichoke and whole bean with lemon, shallot, vinaigrette. And then the last item on this order is a whole veggie quiche.
That's quite a diverse shopping bag, very different than a CSA box.
Yes.
Yeah. Talk about the bag.
Our customers have an option to purchase our bag and keep that. So this customer very kindly purchased our bag. This is one of our largest overheads, is the insulated bag to make sure you get the food cooled. So when they are able to purchase it or make a donation toward that, that's very appreciated. Our customers are really recycle conscious, so they're very good about returning the bags to us and the ice packs. And when they come back, they get wiped down with bleach wipes. And then once they're dried, they're put on the racks and we can reuse them for quite a long time. You can see that they're really nicely insulated. The ice packs are also reusable. They can last us a long time. This week we have about 99 orders.
Tough question.
Okay.
I know you're a nonprofit, but is this profitable?
That is a great question. I think with time it will be profitable. Right now we're not quite profitable. We're very fortunate that we have a specific wonderful donor that likes to remain anonymous that makes sure that we're funded. Like I said, since we're a nonprofit, we're able to apply for some different grants, which helps us until we become sustainable as well. It is a challenge though. It is definitely a challenge. It's great that we're a nonprofit because we can have people like this that are Cal Poly students. They are here through the College Corps program. So they're paid through College Corps, but that doesn't come out of Harvestly's pocket. But they get to come and work with us. They get to meet vendors. They get to make a lot of local connections. So that helps us keep costs down significantly. And the other thing I wanted to mention that helps us keep costs down, besides the bags and ice packs being returned, I guess this isn't our cost lower, but keeping our vendors' cost. So we have any glass jars, any glass bottles, anything that berries come in or eggs come in that can be reused, we save those and give them back to our farmers.
Somebody's dropping off something.
Yes. So this is Gerald from Blossa Urban Gardens, and he brings in a wide variety of organic produce. You can look in these bags and see that this customer has kale and green onions and green leaf lettuce, and these look like beet tops. We sell a ton of eggs, and they're nice to know where they came from and that they're healthy and the chickens are flourishing and you can see them and the chicken vendors are happy to talk to you and show you things if you'd like.
Do you have more than one egg vendor?
We do. We have quite a few. We have to keep up with demand.
So how do you determine who gets what eggs?
Our customers do.
Oh.
So they can log on to the site and they can order from whoever.
You're listening to KCBX Public Radio for the Central Coast. I'm Father Ian, and I'm at the Harvestly warehouse where the crew is packing bags full of local items. Eggs, handmade pies, mac and cheese, cookies, bread, avocados, and much more. I continue the tour as Taryn takes me into the cooler.
So this is more eggs, some cottage pies, some soup. La Migliore is one of our biggest sellers. They are an Italian bakery. They're actually traveling to Italy right now. So usually we have a ton of bread from them. But this week, since they're gone, just have some frozen items. These are salads and soups and some salad dressings, and it looks like an apple pie.
Some of these places are just sending down a couple items. Does that contribute to the overhead that you have or the overhead that they have if they're only sending, you know, a half a dozen items and you have to go to North County to pick them up?
That's why we created our pickup locations. For example, there's one in here that's a coffee vendor, Belnano Coffee in Atascadero. They're great. They just don't sell a lot through us yet. So instead of her having to drive all the way to San Luis to drop off one bag or two bags of coffee, she just drives to Atascadero Hand Feed, drops it off there, and that's one of the pickup spots on our route for our driver.
Okay, so you're trying to keep the overhead cost as low as possible for both the customer and you and the vendor.
Yes.
How do you find new vendors?
Going to farmers market and seeing a lot of word of mouth. A lot of our vendors are really intertwined with other vendors. So they'll say, oh, hey, you know, Salty Bagel is one of our vendors. He's at downtown Slow Farmers Market. He reaches out. A-Town Humble Pie is great about letting other vendors know at the markets. Rad Juice is another one. I think that they are appreciative and we appreciate them. So it's a win-win relationship for all of us. So once they kind of get wind of it, and if they have a great product to sell, they can. On the flip side, if they come onto Harvestly for, say, a few weeks or a month or two and it's not working out for them, then it doesn't work out for them. You know, it's not like they have to sign on for life. If they want to try it, they can. Obviously, they have to have some requirements. We have to know where they're making their food. We require a copy of their liability insurance. Farmers, we have different procedures to go out to their farms and check it out. We want to make sure our customers are getting the best food that's prepared correctly and in clean situations.
While I was there, a supplier arrived to drop off some strawberries. Her presence was a testimony to the hyper-local nature of this business.
Hi, my name is Karina Gudino, and we are strawberry growers out in Arroyo Grande, Rodeo Farm Gardens, and we have very sweet Albion strawberry. We are with Harvestly because Taryn came to our farm, let us know that they were doing a farms together with all the local farmers.
How is your relationship different with Harvestly than it is, say, like farmers markets?
I think it is very nice how the program works because everything gets delivered to one spot. All we have to focus on the timing. We get here, the timing is before 12. Farmers market, you take whatever you have. Sometimes you take them back home because you didn't sell. And with this, you know what they want. You just bring it and that's it. It's already paid for.
How is it different than with supermarkets and grocery stores?
Oh, supermarkets and grocery stores. Okay, supermarkets and grocery stores, there's no way of the store going directly to your farm. Your strawberry already sat at a cooler for about a week at least. And then it's taken to the store. And then at the cooler, there's a spray they put so it can last a little longer. So it's much fresher when you get it straight from a farmer. Farmers market are amazing. We always tell our people too, employees, like, go to farmers markets, go get fresh cilantro that you know it's picked the day before, the day of, or 2 days before, but not a week before.
These strawberries were picked when?
Today.
Okay, and yes. Then the strawberries that I bought at the supermarket today would be picked when?
They're probably a week before they got to the supermarket, and then sometimes they last a whole week at the supermarket. You probably get them 2 or 3 weeks old at the actual store already.
Are they picked at the same ripeness for here?
Nope, they're not picked at the same ripeness. When you get them here, they're picked all red. When they're picked for the cooler, sometimes they're 15% green, 50%, from 50 to 15% green. So they ripen as they're sitting in the cooler. And sometimes that's why they're sweeter when you get them fresh. Yes, because the sun gets you all that sweetness, yes.
Not every supplier has the bandwidth or volume to drop off at the warehouse, so Harvestly makes it as easy as possible.
Luke, he's one of our College Corps fellows. He does a pickup route on Friday mornings. So instead of having all of our farmers be expected to come here, where they don't necessarily have time to do, we provide different locations in North County that have refrigerators and freezers that they can drop off at. And then our College Corps fellow, Luke, drives that pickup route and brings back essentially thousands of items for us to pack in the bags.
Let's go look in that box real quickly.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's a lot of stuff here that they brought in. A lot of diverse stuff. So there's some baked goods, there's some potato chips.
Yep.
And there's a lot of green things.
Hi, my name is Luke Mendoza. I go to Cal Poly, and I'm a College Corps fellow here at Harvestly.
You just drove up with a bunch of stuff. What was that job?
I just do the pickups in Paso and Atascadero. So the day before, on Thursday, I create a list of all the order items and where they need to be picked up. And then I'll come here to the office in the evening on Friday. I'll pick up a lot of baked goods from SLO, pick up a bunch of vendors over in Paso, and make my way down back to the office.
Do you get to interact with those vendors?
Some of them, yes. Some of them, no. A lot of storefronts, so I pick up from like Bread Break, House of Bread, Proof and Gather, and it's always the same person working. So over time, I'm able to just really connect with staff, which is really nice. And then some other vendors will like bring it to one site. But it's been very fun to make those connections, especially in SLO. Like sometimes I'll pass by vendors and then I'll see them outside of Harvestly context. I'll see them, like the farmer's market. I'm like, oh my God, I know you. But it's fun.
What have you gained from this experience?
It's been good work ethic. I think I really do well with structure and consistency. And especially this has been a really good way to work on my work ethic and also keep myself self-disciplined. The job is relatively easy. You drive around a car and you set up bags, but it's just been really good for me, good for my mental health, just good for my well-being.
Are you a Harvestly customer?
I have bought a couple of items in the past, which has been really good. I went back home from Orange County, and my parents really are big foodies. I'm a foodie myself, so I brought them like a nice bag of goods, avocados and meats, and they really enjoyed it. And I also get to taste a couple of foods here while I'm working. Vendors have extra items, or someone's dropping off a couple extra treats, and I really enjoyed it.
So, segue to delivery. How many delivery drivers do you have?
Right now we have 5 delivery drivers. We're looking for more if anyone wants to drive. Our drivers can handle usually about 20 deliveries maximum because of space and time in their vehicle. We want to make sure nothing's damaged. You know, we deliver a lot of eggs, we deliver slices of pie, so we don't want bags shoved up against each other or anything. We have one driver that does a coast route, one that does San Luis, usually one or two that does North County. We have quite a few orders up there, and then one that does South, or some conglomeration of that.
And are they volunteers or are they paid for that?
We have a couple paid delivery drivers, and then some of them are our College Corps fellows as well.
How long does it take them to do the deliveries, particularly if they're doing South County?
South County goes all the way to Orchid, so sometimes that takes a little bit. But usually I would say a driver's shift to their final destination is probably 4 to 5 hours maximum. Obviously our San Luis Obispo delivery driver is not that long. That's just a couple of hours, but pretty fast. And I will say a shout out to our customers. They are usually fantastic with tips, and 100% of the driver tips goes to our drivers. Another way that we want to incentivize them and keep them happy and keep them working with us and delivering this delicious food across the coast.
You're listening to KCBX Public Radio for the Central Coast. I'm Father Ian, and I'm at the Harvestly Warehouse, where they are packing up the online food orders and taking deliveries from suppliers so that eager customers can get freshly grown or freshly prepared foods from all across Slo County. So what is the customer experience?
Yes, I'm a Harvestly customer for sure. We have a lot of our favorites, and we have 2 young boys at home that eat us out of house and home, and so they love everything. It's hard now because they're so used to our fresh food, like bread and strawberries in particular, and they know the vendors, they've gotten to meet them and see their farms and see their bakeries, and so they don't want store-bought food anymore.
Can't you just put a loaf of Wonder Bread in one of your bags and say, oh, look!
You would be surprised. A good example is if an oven broke down and a sourdough vendor wasn't able to drop off. If we are quick enough and if a vendor has some, we can usually substitute it, but our customers are particular. So even if I substitute it with a different vendor's sourdough bread, for example, they might not like it, but we try our best to have a superior customer service experience for our customers and make sure they're getting everything. And if they're not, they're refunded and compensated, usually with an extra goodie or something like that in their bags.
I get the sense that your customers just kind of use this for some harder to get items or items that they don't want to go out and get or drive up to Paso and get. Is it just kind of a little bit of boutique shopping for your customers?
I don't think so. I think we have such a wide variety for them. They can order their prepared foods that are ready to eat. They can order anything. A lot of our vendors have, you know, small pop-ups where you can't go to a brick and mortar. A lot of our food vendors in particular, you can find at a farmer's market, but you can't really find them anywhere else. If you're not in San Luis and can't go to downtown Thursday night farmer's market, almost 20 vendors just from San Luis Farmer's Market alone are on our site. So you could just order on our site and have it delivered to your door.
But would this be anybody's primary mode of grocery shopping?
We have some customers that will order 2 dozen eggs a week, 3 dozen eggs a week, that's it. We have some customers that will order 1 or 2 soups a week, and that's it. And then we have some customers that do their entire grocery shopping with us. We have pantry items, everything from olive oil made in Santa Margarita to different spices from Mount Olive. You could do your entire grocery shopping through us if you'd like.
What about the back end of your business, digital stuff?
There's a lot of logistics. There's a lot of communication that happens. If you can imagine working with almost 100 vendors on a weekly basis, plus, you know, this week we're doing 99 orders, so that's at least 99 customers potentially that have questions or, you know, want something specific that our vendors will do. One thing that's nice is we do have a button on there that our customers can reach out directly to the vendor. I'll use myself as an example. I wanted to order jalapeno cheddar sourdough bread from Black Sheep Bakery this week, and I love jalapenos. So I messaged her and I said, hey, can you add some extra jalapenos for me? And I said, I'm happy to pay extra if you need. And so she's throwing extra jalapenos in my bread. If you had a dietary issue and had a question about an ingredient or how something was prepared, our vendors want to be successful and they want to work with our customers. And so that provides a really easy tool. They can either reach out to me or they can reach out directly to our vendors.
You said that your Italian baker just went to Italy and presumably isn't producing as much this week because they're a small family-owned business.
Yep.
That means you have to go into the back end and remove their products?
We have a vacation tab tool.
Okay.
So as long as our vendors log in and set themselves on vacation and then say that was your favorite vendor, if you clicked on them to order, there's a little pop-up that says this vendor's on vacation.
That probably helps you a lot that you can do that with a click, or they can do that with a click rather than you having to go do all the recoding and all that stuff.
Yes, absolutely. We try to make it as seamless for customers and vendors as possible.
Harvestly seems an amazing service to both the customers and suppliers, but it's also an amazing service to the less bougie. What's the Harvestly to School program?
That connects our local farmers to school sites. So our school children are getting fed really good, nutritious produce that, like Karina and Gerald both mentioned, is harvested within a day or two of their orders. It provides one platform for the schools to go to purchase from multiple farmers and have it delivered to their school site versus the schools saying, here's the food that I need, and the food service directors having to reach out to multiple farmers to get it delivered. This just kind of makes it a little easier for them.
You're the platform for the farm to school program to happen.
Yes, we provide the platform, exactly.
That makes you the middleman, though. I'm sure there has to be some sort of financial remuneration for that service.
Right. So with Harvestly in particular, our doorstep delivery, it's an 80-20 split. So our farmers receive 80%. They also get to choose their prices. We are not in control of their pricing. They know that it's that split. We also run a Farms Together program, which is federally funded. And this week that was frozen. That food was going to our food banks, San Luis Obispo and Santa Maria food banks. We don't want to see that go away for our community, and we don't want to see that go away for our farmers. So Harvestly is working hard to pivot and create a system that our food banks can order from. It's even more of a margin that we're giving our farmers in that program because we want them to be successful. And it's kind of hard because the food bank needs to spend as little money on as much food, and farmers are opposite, right? We want to work to get them as much money as we can for their food. It is a federally funded program. Our California program is called Farms Together. We are allocated a contract. So Harvestly reaches out to the farmers. We make sure their produce is listed online. Again, they choose their prices. It's retail pricing for bulk, which is a really big deal because usually they're selling to coolers that try to pay as little as possible. In return, our food banks receive the most like culturally relevant fresh food. Like Karina said, they harvest the strawberries the day of or the day before. Usually food banks, unfortunately, get kind of the leftovers, and this is a way to flip it. They get the most fresh food. So we're very excited about that program and hope it continues. But this week has been definitely challenging.
One of the things I find amazing about the Central Coast is that so often we find a product or service that appears to be in reach of only a select few. But if we take a wider view, we discover that the widest range of our population is being served, fulfilling both the wants of a few and the needs of others in one fell swoop. Harvestly is yet another one of those services and another great reason to live on the Central Coast. This is KCBX Public Radio for the Central Coast. I'm Father Ian, and I'm playing with food.
Next, Carol Tangerman, host of Morning Edition and former producer for Issues and Ideas, has a new segment. She brings us conversations with people who are working to make downtowns across the Central Coast a vibrant place to live and shop.
My guest today is LeBren Harris, CEO of Downtown SLO, a nonprofit organization considered the voice for downtown business. Welcome, LeBren.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Sure. So let's start with your background.
So I am, like many San Luis Obispians, a Cal Poly grad and graduated in 2004. I did leave to go back to my home state of Ohio and went to grad school, completed my program there, and then moved back in 2006. I found my start in hospitality, had no idea that was going to lead to almost two decades worth of experience in hotel sales, which is where I spend majority of my career in that space. And January 2024 is when I made the change from hospitality to nonprofit and leading the amazing organization of Downtown SLO.
It is a great organization. And let's start there. Some of the challenges and successes are similar throughout the country, I assume.
Yes, yes. So when we talk about successes, because there's a lot more success that's not talked about. The challenges are more talked about than the success. And when we talk about the success in a downtown like ours, we have a very high success rate in low vacancy. We're hovering around the 8.6, 8.7 in that area for this time period. Whereas many communities are hovering around still, even 5 years post-COVID, are still in the 30s or 40s in the vacancy rate. But vacancy is a vacancy, and every storefront that's not filled does leave an opportunity for someone, for a visitor, to go somewhere else that has a filled space where they can have that experience. And vacancies limits the type of experience that districts can provide because of the emptiness that's there. But again, the successes of what downtown districts are able to do right now is that they're able to be creative. It's no one size fits all. It is, what is it that this community needs, wants, feels? What is it that they want to experience? And communities are able to curate experiences. Some of them are just one time. It's just a big once a year experience. Otherwise, they're able to break them up and make it multiple times a year to keep people engaged in their districts. And I say those are successes because what's unique about each downtown is what it is that they are curating for their businesses. A lot of downtowns have farmers markets. And of course, we know and love our longtime Thursday night farmers markets, but not many have the experience that we get to offer, that we get to show, that we get to produce on a weekly basis.
Yeah, and the weekly basis is the amazing part.
Yes, yes. It's a lot of work, but it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, it is. And what are some of the other things, before we move on to the challenges, what are some of the other things that you would consider a success that's working in San Luis Obispo downtown?
I think the biggest success at Downtown SLO that's very tangible is the investments. And that's the investments from partners such as the city. They are a pretty substantial partner and believe in economic growth in downtown. If downtown is successful economically, the entire city is going to be successful. Okay. And so that partnership that we get to have is very vital. But not just that partnership, because we have partnerships with Cal Poly, we have partnerships with the county, we have partnerships with other organizations that really help us to be able to do the things that we offer, that we're able to present to the community. But then also the business investments, the businesses and the property owners, they're invested in the success of this organization because it comes right back to them on getting the foot traffic in downtown and into their stores. And investment comes in many different ways. It's not just dollars. It's support. It's the amazing board members that I have on my board that serve two-year terms and continue to come back, continue to be involved in our committees, continue to support and volunteer for our events. And so it's an investment all the way from financial all the way down just to time, or just to even be a part of what the organization continues to deliver.
Yeah. I feel like you can feel that when you go downtown. You know, there's this sense of community is part of it.
Absolutely.
But there's a little more. It seems like there's kind of an interconnectedness.
Yes. And you're right. The community, it really is a community. People make a very specific effort to want to live near or in downtown. And they're not going to do that if there isn't an experience for them to have. Because in any downtown community, no matter where you are, your cost is going to be way more than would it be on the outside. So they are making very specific strategic decisions. And the folks that live around the downtown district in SLO are very strategic in their placement so that they can be involved in the experiences of downtown.
Yeah. Let's talk about that for a minute. The idea of residents downtown. The good side, of course, is that you walk everywhere and there's always something fun going on. The downside, of course, is that oftentimes there isn't a grocery store or, you know, you can't park in front of your own house or apartment or something. What are your feelings about residences downtown, and how does that happen? How does it work?
Yes, residencies in downtown, it's the wave of the future. And the communities that have not had the success of having significant housing in downtown are slowly making their way to that. There is not a grocery store in the core downtown. There is one that's just right outside that some consider downtown. But when you think about currently just the little housing that is not in the district, we have to get more. We're in a community, period, in the county, not just in San Luis Obispo. We're just desperate for more housing. And to be able to have a successful grocery store that's going to be in the core of downtown, we have to have the volume to be able to keep that grocery store to survive, not just to be a one-year, one-and-done type of business. But parking is always going to be a topic of conversation. It's always going to be what we've been used to in this community, of being able to park right up in front of a store and be able to just jaunt all around in the downtown.
Well, especially if it's a grocery store, you almost have to if you have bags of food.
Exactly.
But yeah, in general, I know what you're saying. Some people really want to just park right there in front.
And either you want to spend all day downtown, just come right back to your car, or you just want to go in and get that one, two things, be out in 10 or 15 minutes. Whereas when I started this organization in June of 2024, one of the pillars or one of the avenues with Downtown SLO, what we are responsible for, is advocacy. And downtown parking was one of the very first topics that I had the pleasure of advocating for our downtown businesses. businesses and for our property owners, and really getting that understanding from both sides, from the needs and the whys and the hows from the city perspective, and also how that really affects how a business can actually operate. Because if a shopper is not willing to come downtown for whatever reason, in this case because of parking, then that hurts the business. And so being able to have those conversations, being able to be at the table, being able to ask those hard questions, and to be able to project why these are hindering to the businesses and the property owners that are in downtown, we were able to come together with a solution to be able to present and recommend to City Council. And being a part of that really showed me how invested this community really is. It's not just talk. This community is so invested. And bringing it back to the question that you had on housing is that parking is always going to be a conversation and always going to work to get it right, because if you can't park, you can't get to the places that you're going to get to. But at the same time, when you live in or around the downtown, just a common thought, and I think you kind of said it earlier, is that your intent is to walk. Your intent is to be by foot or by bike or by some sort of small motorized vehicle that's not an automobile.
Right, it is. You know, and then I'll bet you have different people weighing in from different sides, because there are people who think it's reasonable to say, I'm going to park here and I'm going to shop in, say, a 3 or 4 block radius or whatever. Mm-hmm. And that's fine, which is different from someone who thinks they should be able to park right in front. You know, I mean, it's like, what's reasonable to what's a reasonable amount of walking to expect in a downtown?
That's so true. And that's what I love about our downtown, because for those who need to be right in front for 10 minutes or maybe for the 2 or 3 hours that's permitted right now, you have that. For those who don't and want to park in the structures because they're going to be downtown for 6 hours, you have that. For those who need to walk or want to walk, there are plenty of bike lane options to park your bikes. Some events, not just farmers market and concerts in the plaza, but some other events that happen, they have bike valet. So
yeah, really, I love that. I've seen that.
Yeah. So it's not a one size fits all. And when we talk about non-successes in downtowns, personally, I believe it's those who try to fit into a one size fits all. You can pick and choose, and one day I'm going to want to do this, and next week I'm going to want to do that. Just having a broad range.
When you mention parking structures, of course, you know, we're all watching the construction of the new one with the Performing Arts Center parking structure.
So excited about that.
Yeah.
Because this is really going to help uplift our cultural corridor, is kind of what we call it. It was going to be the Slow Rep Theater that's going to go into that facility. So not only is it going to add more parking spaces in a downtown, it's going to add another experience in an activated area that's needed. And San Luis Obispo has long been a cultural community, but hasn't been uplifted in the limelight, so to speak, with major national exposures. This Slow Rep Theater, I don't know if you've seen it or if any listeners have seen the design of what it's going to look like. It is going to be so, so awesome. And it's going to really feel like a cultural downtown district that really focuses on the arts.
Yeah, it's going to be great. If you're just joining us, my guest today is LaBren Harris, and she is the CEO of Downtown SLO, a nonprofit organization that is the voice for the downtown businesses and helping to get a thriving economy downtown. So challenges. We mentioned earlier when you talked about successes and how some of them are the same no matter where you go. Is that the same with challenges, or are there any that are unique to downtown San Luis Obispo?
I think what is common is keeping a downtown clean and safe. I think what challenges that's very unique to San Luis Obispo is that our clean and safe program is run by our organization. And clean and safe, just to back it up, is exactly what it means. It's keeping downtown clean of feces, vomit, trash, cigarettes. It's the non-glamorous side that many folks don't want to think about, but there's a dedicated effort to make sure that that is not a common scene and a common occurrence is going through downtown. Many districts have this program, have a very robust program. What the challenge of Downtown SLO has is that this is a program that is very underfunded, so to speak.
Okay.
And it's really, really hard to get partners or financial support to make it what it should and what it could be. We do partner with the city of SLO that helps supplement some funding for this program. And it's a challenge in our district and other districts when you can't fund it. Because if it were to go away, then that becomes, oh my gosh, what happened? Why is it that nobody's out here doing this? Why is it out here nobody's doing that? But when it's working and you don't notice it, and you don't see feces on the ground very often, because that's because there are dedicated folks that are out there making sure that, that is cleaned up. So that is a challenged program within our organization just to keep it funded. And like I said, other districts are able to have other fundings that is based on a property tax, and they're able to have that investment.
And it's bound to continue just in general to be a problem for cities, you know, with the recent news that Governor Newsom decided not to provide any new funding for local governments to combat homelessness in his revised budget plan. You know, it is. It's a problem everywhere.
I will say this, even though that may be, I believe that communities are going to come together to continue the work that has already happened or that is looking to happen to make their communities safe and to continue to keep their communities clean. I could be an optimistic, whereas I hope that is the case.
So in our last couple of minutes, what are some of the things, LeBren, that you appreciate, you know, just on a daily basis about downtown San Luis Obispo?
You know, I have an amazing team. I have an absolutely amazing team that comes in every single day and gives everything they have to make sure that the events that we pull together, the partnerships that we have, anything that we are presenting is going to come back to our businesses and our properties. They never put that to the side, and they keep it in the forefront. And so it's been fabulous working with the amazing team that I get to work with. But when I get the opportunity to be in downtown and actually just take a walk around, which I try to do fairly often when I'm not in so many meetings or Zoom calls, but just to be able to appreciate what it is that we have down here and the excitement that I see when people are walking by, or maybe they're needing help with something, they just can't get their orientation. I can briefly talk to them for 2 minutes just to assist them, whatever it is that they need. And downtown, as well as the city, as well as this county, has presented itself to be such a welcoming community that anybody who comes in and experiences it, they just feel it. So to be able to be a part of that, to help facilitate that, that's just heartwarming. We have a very special downtown in aesthetic and in community.
Well, thank you, LeBren. My guest is LeBren Harris, and she's the CEO of Downtown SLO. It's a nonprofit organization. This is Issues and Ideas. I'm Carol Tangeman.
Up next, the Live Oak Music Festival is a celebration of music featuring local and touring acts. It has been a part of our life and culture since 1989. This year, the festival is happening from June 13th to the 15th at the El Choro Regional Park in San Luis Obispo County. You can buy tickets for the festival at liveoakfest.org. My guests today are Marisa Waddell and Caitlin Trivoni. Marisa has been the artistic director of the Live Oak Music Festival since 2017. She is also KCBX's program director. And Caitlin is the operations director and concessions coordinator at the festival.
Welcome, Caitlin and Marisa.
Thank you.
Thank you, Maher.
Let's jump straight into logistics. Can each of you tell us what your specific role is in organizing the Live Oak Music Festival? And Caitlin, we'll start with you.
Sure. So I get started first thing with making sure all the permits are in line with county parks, the fire department, the ABC, all the legalities of hosting the festival. And I also start in the beginning of the year by coordinating our team of about 25 core volunteers who are each responsible for their own areas within the festival. We hold regular meetings and just making sure that all the little pieces come together to create the big piece and present that to the county and the community in the way that Live Oak is known to do.
And Marisa?
Well, I do a lot of different things as artistic director. I think probably the core of it would be working with our booker, Todd Newman of Good Medicine Presents, to select the music that'll be presented at Live Oak. And so starting usually the fall before the next summer, we start working out ideas between one another, and we get ideas also from our music director here at KCBX, Neil Losey. And Todd pitches ideas, and I pitch ideas, and the agents that we work with also pitch ideas to us. And then we also get submissions from musicians who want to play Live Oak. Throughout the season, we work out who's on tour, who we can afford with our small budget, and who might fit the flow of a particular day so that we have the many different genres represented who we want to have represented at the festival for the following season. I also work very closely with marketing and social media, and this is something that Caitlin does too. We edit everything that is public facing. So any kind of newsletters that go out, letters, emails, press releases, and then working with other coordinators in different parts of the festival to make the festival better. Sort of from an artistic and cultural perspective is kind of where I'm coming from as the artistic director.
So give us some numbers for this year's festival. How many artists are performing? How many volunteers are part of the team? And how many months of work did it take to get to the finish line?
We have about 30 acts throughout the festival, not necessarily including all of the, you know, storytellers and kids performers and things like that. We have three different stages. Four if you include the kids stage, at five if you include the open mic stage. But the main acts are on the big KCBX stage. We have a stage two in the back of the festival, which is really kind of a fun night. It feels almost like a nightclub, and during the day it's just a fun, intimate gathering place. And then we have our hot lick stage in the beer garden, which is where people can relax and have a beverage and chat with friends and listen to music. Starting out in the morning early with our morning hot licks sessions, which are often singer-songwriters. They're often local acts, going from 8 a.m. all the way until 1 o'clock in the morning.
Caitlin, anything you'd like to add?
We have a team of about 500 to 600 volunteers all in all that come together to make this event a success.
Wow.
We are still looking for some additional volunteers to help out with this year's festival. We're approaching the 500 number right now. So, yeah, we're really appreciative of our community who comes together and supports KCBX and supports Live Oak Music Festival. And I'd say it really starts at the end of the previous year's festival. So about a month after the festival, we start by having another meeting and talking about what went really well and what could be improved for the following year. And then I usually spend a couple months over the fall and winter months compiling those feedback notes and ideas and thinking about ways that we can make the following year even better. And I'd say the bulk of the planning gets done usually at the turn of the year in January. So January is our first meeting again with that team of about 25 volunteers that I mentioned who make up the different departments. Yeah, January through June are the heavy months of working out all the kinks, but it's really a year-long project.
What are some of the challenges that each of you faces in organizing a festival of such a scale? Marisa?
Well, budget is a big one for us because KCBX is a small nonprofit organization. We don't have that many employees. And as we know, there are budget cuts looming in addition to the challenges we already face. And so we are always struggling to be able to afford the touring acts that we want to present, especially because there are so many festivals and so much competition nationally and internationally. And there are some big festivals who pay top dollar, and we can't do that at KCBX and at Live Oak. So that's a challenge. It's just making sure that we're able to get somebody who's already maybe routed through at least the West, if not through California. And we can't get, you know, some of the big acts that people wish that we could get at Live Oak. We've never been able to ever afford somebody like Emmylou Harris or somebody like that. But we have high standards in musicianship. And so people have come to expect that even if they've never heard of an artist that we're presenting at Live Oak, they know it's going to be really good music. So that's probably the biggest challenge, is just, you know, being able to afford the music that we present. And then coordinating to ensure that we can have a full representation of the wide variety of genres that we want to present as well. Because the aim of Live Oak is to represent the kind of music that you hear on KCBX, which is very diverse. Mm-hmm. So we have everything from Hawaiian steel and Western swing all the way to Afro-Cuban funk on our main stage and on our side stages. So it is a challenge, but it's a fun puzzle to put together a diverse lineup that really flows throughout each day.
Caitlin?
Yeah, I'd say fun puzzle is the perfect way to describe the majority of my involvement in Live Oak also, and what I love about it. Every little thing can be a challenge, and trying to make sure that it all works. Managing finite resources. Obviously, I said we're still looking for some volunteers, and if we don't get those volunteers, kind of rethinking how each of us is utilizing our volunteers so that we are able to accomplish the same goal with fewer number of people than we might be comfortable with. And just always thinking about how we can solve smaller issues with the resources available to us, or, you know, making sure that if one vendor isn't available for something that you always rely on that vendor for, finding a new vendor. There's always little things like that. Say, selling tickets is, I don't want to call it a challenge, but across the board in the concert industry right now, pre-sale tickets are less strong than they normally are for all concerts in the county, and that rings true for this as well. And so if you haven't gotten your Live Oak tickets, don't wait until the last minute.
Hear.
Yes. And you know that you're going to go, just go ahead and get those tickets now, because that just helps us internally with our numbers and thinking about how we can make the best festival for you all come June 13th.
How did you come to be involved with Live Oak? Marisa, let's start with you.
Well, I have been involved with Live Oak since 1990. The festival started in 89, so I missed the first one at Biddle Park. But I came back from college to work at KCBX. And I started out as a DJ on Acorn Radio, which when we were at our old location, Live Oak Camp, which at the time was called San Marcos Camp, and then they named it after the Live Oak Music Festival. But back in those days, we had a low-power radio station that we broadcast only to the camp. So I was a DJ on that little tiny temporary radio station. And then was asked to be on the music selection committee at the time. I think there were like seven people who were selecting music for the festival. And they were all volunteers. This was founded by volunteers and, of course, some staff, Chris O'Connell and Frank Lanzone and Chris Anderson, who were staff at the time. So I was just sort of getting in on the ground floor, and I really enjoyed doing the music booking and moved into the coordinator position for that crew. And it just became too complicated to have that many people selecting music. And we were thrilled when Todd and Corey Newman from Good Medicine Presents agreed to help us book the festival. And that made it much more efficient. And so we got some people who do it every day to help us out. And that made it a much more smooth process. So I started working with Todd to book the festival and became the artistic director, because more things were coming onto my plate besides just booking. So we broadened the title to artistic director from booking coordinator.
Caitlin, what about you?
Well, I got involved with the Live Oak Music Festival. I started as a volunteer also. I moved to the Central Coast in 2018, and 2019 was my first year volunteering on the concessions crew for Live Oak. And the previous concessions coordinator was also acting as the operations director, as 2019 was the first year that Live Oak moved to San Luis Obispo from Live Oak Camp, which Marisa mentioned, in Santa Barbara County. So she took on the majority of those big move logistics, and I volunteered on her crew in concessions. Then we all know what happened in 2020, and we had our actual Live Oak Festival in 2022. We had 2020 and 2021 were dedicated to Live Oak on the radio.
So because of COVID.
Correct. So I was involved with those events as well. As you might imagine, a completely different beast than the actual festival. So I got to get my toes wet in the Live Oak on the radio. And then in 2022, I stepped up and officially was the operations director and concessions coordinator.
If you're just joining us, this is Issues and Ideas, and I'm Meher Ali talking to Marisa Waddell and Caitlin Schivoni about the Live Oak Music Festival that starts on June 13th. Tickets are on sale at liveoakfest.org. Can you share some of the artists that are part of this year's festival, and what is one event or artist that you're looking forward to seeing at this year's Live Oak? Marisa?
Well, our headliners are Sima Funk, who is an Afro-Cuban funk rising star, and he's going to be on Friday, June 13th, closing out our KCBX stage that night. California Honey Drops are a very popular band. They're actually attracting a lot of ticket sales for us on the Saturday of Live Oak, which is June 13th. That's kind of, you know, good time R&B and jazz and blue and soul kind of all mixed together. Super fun band. And on Sunday, our headliner is Grateful Shred, which is...
I love the names, by the way.
Great names. Grateful Shred, as you might imagine, is a Grateful Dead-inspired country rock band. They're not specifically only a tribute band. They play originals, but they also are such good musicians. They're, I think, one of the best Grateful Dead adjacent bands that are out there. So they're going to be performing on Sunday, June 15th at Live Oak. Some of my favorite acts, well, Sima Funk is the one I'm probably most looking forward to. I've seen videos of his live performances, and they are exciting and dynamic and super fun. I'm also looking forward to a lot of the singer-songwriters like Margot Silker, who's an Americana and roots country performer from California, but then moved to Oregon. And Miko Marks, I'm really looking forward to her on Sunday of Live Oak, soulful Americana and black country artist with really kind of gospel roots underneath all of the country and Americana mix. So it's going to be a beautiful, beautiful set, I'm sure, that Miko Marks is going to do. AJ Lee and Blue Summit is an up-and-coming bluegrass and Americana group. That's going to be a really fun, exciting set as well. So many others. I mean, I could just go on. I'm excited about them all.
Yeah, it sounds like each of them is so unique and will bring something really special to the festival. Caitlin, any particular artists that you're looking forward to seeing?
Yeah, I mean, just like you said, everyone is very unique and there really is something for everyone. Like Marisa, I'm most excited for Sima Funk. I've had the pleasure of seeing them on about four or five other stages, and it's been the most phenomenal show every time. They bring 110% to every performance every time I've seen them, and I would really encourage everybody to not miss that Friday afternoon and evening of music. I think also High Step Society is going to be a really fun band and something a lot different than people have seen before. It's a combination of brass and big band music mixed with EDM. So very unique, very fun performances. You know, I think the wonderful thing about live music is you can hear these artists on KCBX and you can hear them on Spotify or whatever your music streaming service is, but there's nothing that really compares to the experience of seeing them live. So I think there's nothing that really beats it. It's just a really great atmosphere for that.
And speaking of Spotify, if you do have a Spotify account, you can check out the Live Oak Music Festival 2025 Spotify playlist so you can get a preview of all of the various acts that we have on the different stages right there on your device.
Thanks for sharing that. So, Marisa, Live Oak is KCBX's biggest fundraiser. What does this mean in terms of KCBX's day-to-day operations? What does the money raised help us do?
It helps us do everything that any listener expects us to do, which is to bring the music programs that you listen to, the talk programs like Issues and Ideas that you listen to, the news that you hear every day. Anything that we do on KCBX is funded by the Live Oak Music Festival, along with our pledge drives and other fundraisers. But it is the single largest fundraiser for KCBX.
What makes this festival special for you, Caitlin?
You know, like I mentioned, I'm relatively new to the area in the grand scheme of things. I've been involved with Live Oak since 2019, but I have a bunch of different things that I do around town related to music, but this is by far my favorite event, and it's just so special to me to see all of Slo County and beyond, this group of friends that comes together year after year and just gets so excited and so into this festival. It really is just becomes this cherished community event. It's small enough that you see all your friends, you bump into people that your neighbors, and they're all there for the same reason, which is hearing great music in a great atmosphere, enjoying great food, beverages, great weather. How can you beat the weather of the El Choro Valley, and raising money for KCBX. Father's Day weekend, so it's a really great time to spend with family, and it's close enough to town that you can come for the day, you can camp. It's just a really family-friendly, well-loved event in the community, and I'm just so grateful to coordinate that for everyone here.
Marisa.
You said it so beautifully, Caitlin. I would echo everything that she said. For me, I think it probably is distilled into the music and the people and the community. Community is really what Live Oak is all about. And you can feel that when you arrive on site. We have something called the Live Oak Way, which is basically everything you ever learned in kindergarten, to be kind to each other. And you can feel that when you arrive at the festival. A relaxed, loving atmosphere full of music and joy and people loving on each other.
Is there anything else that either of you would like to add?
Buy tickets ASAP. Please don't wait. And I want to echo also what Caitlin said, that you can come for a single day if you like, or come for the entire weekend.
I'd say beyond the music, there's just so much more to enjoy about the festival. We have about 14 food vendors with every different type of cuisine you could want. And we have a great beer and wine garden with some beer and wine tastings and ciders and kombucha and yoga on Saturday and Sunday and a sound bath. There's tea ceremony. So really something for everybody in the family at all hours of the day.
Thank you so much, Caitlin and Marisa.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That was Caitlin Schiavone, Operations Director and Concessions Coordinator at the Live Oak Music Festival, and Marisa Waddell, the festival's Artistic Director. Live Oak is happening from June 13th to the 15th at the El Choro Regional Park in San Luis Obispo County. You can buy tickets for the festival at liveoakfest.org.
You've been listening to Issues and Ideas on KCBX, Central Coast Public Radio. Gary Eister composed our theme music. A special thanks to all our guests and contributors this week. I'm Meher Ali. Join us each Monday from 1 to 2 in the afternoon for more local stories. Follow us on Instagram at KCBXFM. You can head to our website to learn more about what you heard today or to listen to past segments at kcbx.org.